We're excited because John and Marilyn Gorenflow are here with us this morning, along with their daughter, Christiana. They have two other daughters, Sarah and Rachel, who are not here, and they'll tell you where they are and what they're doing. But Kathy and I were reminiscing. We've known John and Marilyn for over 21 years now. We met them just a little over 21 years ago. And we were reminiscing about them. I can't remember, John and Marilyn, how many years it is, but it's quite a few years DRBC has been part of their support team as well. So we're excited about that. But John was a FAPE at Laughlin when Kathy and I first came here. Marilyn taught at a local Christian school. And as I said yesterday on the long drive back from Dallas, Kathy and I were reminiscing and some of the things we remember. And I'm going to cut this short because I want to give them all the time possible, but some of the things we remembered about them is how generous they are, how hospitable they are, how adventurous they are, and I think another word that I forgot in the first service is mischievous. One of our first weekends here in Del Rio, living here, early one Saturday morning, we hear all of this commotion on our roof. We thought the roof was falling in. And we thought it was a home invasion or something, and we're about to call the police when who knocks on our front door but John and Marilyn Gorenflow, and they were stomping our roof. So that's a little bit about John and Marilyn. Well, they took their love of flying, John's love of IT and computer things, and Marilyn's love of teaching, and they are using it now in the sake of taking the gospel to the uttermost parts of the world. And we're privileged to have a part of that with them, and so we're excited to have them here this morning. John and Marilyn Gorenflow.
Thank you, Joe. I hope to inspire you like I was inspired many years ago. Paul told Timothy to take what he had learned, to pass it to the next people, who would in turn pass it to the next people. The whole concept of discipleship. Training the next generation who entrains, and then the multiplying effect of the gospel. That is what we want to take this opportunity to share with you guys today, and to thank you for being that in our lives. 21? More than 21 years ago. I won't say back in 90, I came here as a student and then stayed as an instructor, and this body was instrumental in our life. I mean, Johnny Day took me under wing and taught me how to lead worship. And you guys as a body wrapped around us, and we had our first child here, which we'll show us the picture here. But so I want to take this opportunity to inspire you, because I know there's a lot of young military guys out there, and I was reached that way. Touching the future with technology and training. I touch the future because I teach. Who knows? And Joe can't answer. Who said this? Christy McAuliffe, astronaut teacher. She's a good inspiration. We are the Gorenflows. I am John. This is my wife, Marilyn. Our oldest, Rachel, is second year in university at Hawaii, where she's studying tropical agriculture and nutrition. But now she's switching to nursing as a major. And her plan and vision is to go back to Congo and work as a missionary. Sarah, our second daughter, is currently at the University of Northern Colorado, where she's studying international relations and physics. One of her passions is martial arts, and she hopes to take that passion back to Congo to teach women and young girls to defend themselves as a way of helping stem the problem of rape and violence against women. Christiana, as you know, is with us. We have her for a few more years. She's a junior in high school now, and we're excited that she's with us and can't wait to see what she does. Here's an old picture of some young people. This is Rachel when she was born and dedicated right here at your church with your pastor.
And this is a verse that we've had as a family verse for 25 years now. And whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. And we believe that even when we started here in Del Rio, a lot of people don't want to be stationed here, or they don't want to be station here again or longer. But we found this to be, we met the best people, and we have the strongest friendships really from our time here. And I believe part of it is that the Lord enabled us to follow this verse. Whatever you do, do it in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. He will bless that.
When I was 7 years old, I grew up in a Christian family, and I accepted Christ when I was 7 years old. But at 9 years old, I saw Star Wars, and that impacted my life as a young boy. And I said, that's what I want to do. I want to fly. I want to fight. I want to go to the farthest parts of the universe, right? I want to go to space and do all those things. But as a Christian, I was conflicted. Well, how do I use that passion and yet serve God? A few years later, an MAF missionary came to our church and showed MAF. And I was like, so I can use this passion for flying, this passion for serving, together with my passion with Christ. And for me at the time, it was so clear that the best flight training in the world, bar none, is the U.S. Air Force. I learned to fly, fight, serve my country, and then whenever God calls me, I will have the skill sets necessary to then go to the othermost corners. So following that dream, I came here as a student in 89, stayed on as a FAPE, first assignment instructor pilot, then I was raped, reassigned instructor pilot. just an acronym, you guys know that. And so I got to fly the T-37, the T-38, and then I switched and flew helicopters and was involved in special ops. And we did the combat rescues in Albania and Serbia. And we welcomed Christiana into our life over in England when we were based in England. But coming back from that time, we felt that the Lord was calling us out. And so we put in for a separation package and got out June before September 11th. So obviously God has his timing and his plans, and we're able to get out of the military, and then we've now been 13 years with MAF. So that was us coming to MAF. What is MAF? To hear the name of Jesus, to share that love. MAF has been gifted and chosen, we believe, to be the tools of aviation and technology to help reach the isolated people in the world so they may be physically and spiritually transformed.
When we were first accepted with Mission Aviation Fellowship, after we went to language school in Quebec to learn French, because Congo is a French-speaking country officially, we went over to Congo and we spent 7 years there. For me, this was a particularly special assignment because my mother, back in her 20s, before she got married, was an MK, missionary kid teacher, in the Belgian Congo is what she used to call it, because it was back in the 50s. But she taught MKs for 3 years. So I grew up hearing stories about that. And my passion, really, I really wanted to go overseas and teach missionary kids. So you can see that our visions really very much meshed, John's and mine. So I had that opportunity to meet that that dream. And there we were in Del Rio. A little bit about, not Del Rio, DRC. That's what we often call it, the DRC. So here's some friendly kids at an airstrip, always ready to say hello. We're definitely the most exciting thing that happens to them all week. But here we have the busy streets of Kinshasa. Whereas John was flying outside the city, we lived in the city itself, and found it to be a fascinating, busy, and sometimes scary place. However, our girls, since we returned, have told us that the streets of the United States are boring. I really can't argue it. They really are not very exciting compared to what we saw over there. There's just always something to see out the car window or as you're walking along. And here is Kikongo, one of the villages that we serve. I'll tell you a lot more about that in a little bit. And these are the girls right before we left. We came back about 3 years ago, and we've still been adjusting to being stateside. The girls and I have. John comes home occasionally to visit. He'll tell you more about that also in a little bit. One of the fun things about being overseas was just the variety of animals that the girls got to know. And most of these arrived at our doorstep in cardboard boxes brought by the pilot of the family. And like, for example, this one has, that Rachel is holding a little civet cat, which is like a weasel. And we had him for a few months. And then there's a pangolin, which is
an armored
anteater. That was the small version. And he was very cute and very lovable, despite those claws. He'd climb up my jeans legs, which is awesome if you're wearing jeans.
It's like cuddling a pine cone.
Yeah. But he really was. He was fun. We did not have this Mazu, the Congo clawless otter. It's a very rare breed of otter. In fact, they thought he was extinct at one point. But some missionaries out in Congo have raised this one from a pup, really. There's another picture of our pangolin, the cuddly pine cone. And that's our civet cat at Christmas time. This little copy here, we never were able to have because they're very, very rare, and they're only found in the Congo. But we love the animal in general. And there's little Mazu making friends with John. Actually, John visited that village very regularly as a pilot. And so every time he visited, he'd go into the house and make friends with this little otter. So the animal whisperer, my husband. We also have bonobos there. This is the one who came in our gate and visited for about half an hour before we put him back out the gate. Our most intriguing and exasperating animal was by far the red-tailed guenon. This monkey here.
Kichu.
Named Kichu, yes. So I could tell you a lot of stories about that, but we're going to go on. When we were in the Congo, I continued to teach. I had the privilege of teaching at the international school there, and I taught English as a second language. And I did the same out in the community. Many of my students here in the Université Chrétienne de Kinshasa, it was a very small Christian university, and the students who came were pastors or lawyers or gardeners. You never knew exactly who would show up in your class, but it was a very rewarding time. I very much enjoyed teaching there.
Which was often taught by candlelight.
Yeah, it was, because the electricity went off about one out of every two or three classes. But great spirit they had. And that's one of the things I appreciate about the people that I've met in the Congo is their resilience, because they have an amazing potential. The country itself, natural resources, etc., amazing potential. But at the moment, it symbolizes African triumph of disappointment over potential. And as I mentioned last service, that quote that says, "Hope deferred makes the heart sick." And that is how we feel in many ways when we think about the Congo, is just because we've seen the disappointment again and again, or people who face war again and again, or pillaging. And we'd encourage and appreciate your prayers for the people of the Congo. Because it is considered the most infrastructurally deficient country in the world. John's going to break that down a little bit for us.
Well, this used to be a road. Back in the 50s, you could literally drive a VW bug from one side of the country to the other. But when they gained their independence, things like maintenance or preventive maintenance or, you know, those concepts just got lost. They didn't think that they're important. And so nature has a way of reclaiming. You want a dangerous job? There you go. Be a Congolese truck driver. Al Jazeera decided to make a show on these risky things, and they found, let's try the Congo and see what it is. So they went to Lubumbashi, which is south, where they have some goods and stuff coming in, and they were trying to drive this truck 300 kilometers north, so not even 180 miles north, which, of course, in the U.S. is, a couple hours? They expected it to take 3 or 4 days. In reality, it took over a month, and they've got it all documented here. So it's a very interesting video to watch. Here's some statistics. There's only 1,398 miles of paved roads, which is barely enough to even go straight across the country if they did, much less serve the people. Comparison, Guinea, one-tenth the size, but another African country, has over twice the amount of paved roads. And Algeria, which is about the same size, has 50,000 miles of paved roads. And you can't even compare to here in America, we've got over 2 million. So for you visual people, The blue is waterways. That doesn't count as roads. Look at the little red. The pieces of red are the short sections of paved road. So you can see there's no one road that even gets across the country. So there's still a huge need for aviation as we as MAF is still serving there. This is another realization. This is a composition NASA put together of the world at night. Where are lights? Where are cities? Where is power? Where is infrastructure? You notice a certain black void in the middle of Africa. So our black heart of Africa is in need of your prayers.
And when we were in the Congo, John was known as Pilote John, Pilote being the French word for pilot, and I was known as Mama Pilote, which I liked very much. He would fly in and out of small strips, bringing supplies and so forth. This is an example when there's a tuberculosis. They discovered that there was a village that was beset with tuberculosis, and it had been, but that just came to the attention of the right people. And this is where we were able to bring in, I think, a total of 8 tons of supplies, plus doctors who could then supervise the care of the people. So right now, I think the disease that we most often hear about on the news, at least I do, is Ebola. And that is not only in, I think most people think it's mostly in Liberia and Texas, but it you also have a small pocket, recent outbreak in the Congo, which is completely separated. And it's not the first time, because Ebola actually started, at first was a human disease in the Congo, and it's named after the Ebola River, which is in the Congo as well. One of our friends that was actually our next door neighbor when we lived in the Congo wrote a little bit about his experience flying in as a pilot, because we are, MAF is flying to fight against Ebola. What I particularly like is the verse he starts out with. He says, "This is what the Lord Almighty said. Administer true justice, show mercy and compassion to one another." The mention of Ebola generates all kinds of reaction. In some, there is a hysteria that defies reason. For others, it generates profound fear and suspicion. Others respond with compassion. At the risk of sounding trite, what would Jesus do? The current outbreak in Congo is much smaller and more contained than the one happening in West Africa. And I might stop briefly and mention that the reason it's so well contained, in one reason, is because there is so little infrastructure. If you can't drive easily or from place to place, then you don't tend to spread it as easily. Yet it is still a serious threat that we are fighting with the resources we have. This is not our first rodeo with Ebola. So in some ways, Congo enjoys somewhat of an advantage because they have already encountered this disease. So what's it like to fly into the hot zone? Well, it's a bit tense. But at the same time, I'm filled with a sense of purpose and alert determination. After landing at Boende, the airplane is met by a team of people dressed in protective gear to sanitize the tires and feet of those getting off the airplane. After climbing out of the airplane, the health officer sticks a gizmo near my ear to take my temperature. They show me the digital readout, confirming I am normal, or at least my temperature is. Everyone resists the urge to shake hands. I remember in a previous outbreak, people would greet each other by touching elbows. They don't do that anymore. There's not a lot of chit-chat. Supplies and equipment are unloaded and transferred into four-wheel drive vehicles. Freight and passenger manifests are signed and copies exchanged. A new flight plan is filled out. Taxes are paid. Then departing passengers and bags are weighed. Signed health forms attesting to the health of departing passengers are exchanged. The quarantine zone prohibits anyone with symptoms from leaving the area. Everyone gets sprayed again getting on the airplane. The airplane steps get sprayed. Inside, we try to wipe off all the excess spray with paper towels. Everyone gets out their hand sanitizer and uses it liberally. There's a sense of relief when the door is closed. After briefing the passenger and running the checklist, we spool up the engine for the 424-mile return flight to Kinshasa. Sure, Ebola is scary, but God has given us a unique opportunity to show compassion and make a difference in the lives of those affected by this terrible disease. And I have to say, I'm really thankful that God has positioned us to be able to have this unique role where we can fly in and make a difference there in the Congo. In fact, disaster relief has often been one of our roles as Mission Aviation Fellowship.
When the earthquake struck Haiti a few years ago, it wiped out the infrastructure. Communications grids, cell phone towers, all that stuff was destroyed. So there was basically no way for people to communicate. Since MAF was already there, we were leaders in the community. They knew us. And then we were able to fly a normal commercial flight in with two suitcases. And in 30 minutes, we could set up a satellite internet system and have an internet cafe. And because we're already aviation experts, we started the coordination efforts. And we organized who's coming in with what aid, where, and put them on this part of the ramp. Or so we got too much water, bring this. And so because we were able to manage the crisis, manage the responses, you know, we were just instrumental because that's who we are. That's what MAF is. We're technical people using the gifts and talents that God has given us to show the love of Christ. And He has uniquely positioned us around the world to meet these crises. But of course, if you give a man a fish, he'll eat for a day. If you teach a man to fish, then he can eat for a lifetime. So we need to have sustained response. We need to have building in, capacity building. We need to train the nationals and train the local people so they can continue on. So that's our thrust of effort. But technology has always been part of our DNA. Aviation and technology is part of the core of what MAF is, our core mission. And since the days of Nate Saint, we've had the two-way radio. The two-way radio grew into communication grids.
Now, one of the issues, one of the reasons the Kikongo Institute of Pastoral Training is so important. But the whole idea is to reduce the idea of ministry talent drain. It used to be a church would be formed, young men and women would get enthusiastic about the ministry and they wanted to go get trained, and so they'd go to the big city and they would never come back. And that was a problem. So that's why it was so important for them to actually establish a village institute, which MAF serves. They go, they bring supplies and transport there. But this is an example of what's happening. It's not just the men who are trained, it's also the women who are also trained. In Old Testament, New Testament, in all the things that you would normally find in a seminary, but also in literacy. Sometimes, particularly the women, hadn't learned how to read, and they're taught sewing. The men are taught carpentry. They're taught advanced farming methods. They go back to their villages not only with the gospel and with a great foundation, but they also go back as leaders. But they are the best educated, and they can help their villages in so many ways. This was an example of technology being used in that institute.
Mike Lowry was sick and was not able to make the flight out for one of the last classes. And so with the new satellite in place, they set up a Skype session, and he taught the class over Skype to the class. And so here's technology being used right there in the situation to continue that education of the pastoral training.
Now, one of the stories I've recently heard, this happened about 100 miles, 150 miles north of Kikongo. We went in and they built an airstrip and with some help and supervision of Mission Aviation Fellowship so we could come in. And since that time, the missionary family has been able to settle there. As they built their house, a mason was helping them. And he came to them one day in tears and said, "My 4-year-old daughter has died and it is my fault." And they said, "Why do you think it's your fault?" He said, "Well, because I haven't finished paying my dowry. The dowry to my wife's parents." And that's a whole nother cultural subject. And he said, "So the parents went and they bought a curse and they cursed my daughter, our daughter." And they said, "A curse? Where did you buy the curse?" They said, "Oh, from the local pastor." And I'm just speechless when I hear that. But that gives you an idea of the lack of training that is at this time unavailable in pockets, in particularly rural pockets. And so the vision is to have training that will teach, have a really solid biblical training, whether a pastor is literate or not, they can still get a biblical basis of training instead of mixing in old animism with Christianity. An example from the Philippines, there's a team that went from MAF to try to think, well, how can we help? What technology? They wanted some help. They said, what can we use to help this leader of 200 Filipino pastors? And he said they set up a two-year program that would not take the pastors out of their villages, but just like a weekend of neighboring villages and so forth, and they'd keep going back to the village and retain that connection. But he said, we have an immediate problem. There are a number of people who come to our pastors, and the pastors don't know how to answer their questions. The big question is, how do we know that these Muslims and these cults keep asking us, how do you know that Jesus is the Son of God? So what they did was they had an experienced Filipino pastor sit down with a new pastor, and they had a conversation. And the experienced pastor told them, told him how to answer, and gave him some scriptures and so forth. This conversation, which happened over several days, was recorded and edited and then put on a cell phone and passed from one pastor to another. And they were able to pass this conversation on in a very culturally and appropriate way, because they do have, they're literally more cell phones than toothbrushes on the planet at the moment. And you just have, they had an easy way to pass on this very important teaching. And that's why I feel like it's important. I feel like this is where we have a unique ministry. This is a technology, but we can fit it in to what your culture needs right now.
So from airplanes to cell phones, training completes the delivery path for the news. Pilots will fly around with Bible boxes because one of the aspects, you know, people want to get the New Testament in their language. But this takes a lot of weight in the airplane. Yes, it's good to have, but most of the people are illiterate. They cannot read. So what's a new way that we can do this with technology? Everybody has a cell phone. So now with this little Wi-Fi hotspot, we can fly into a village, and they can sync their phone to this Wi-Fi hotspot and download audio. They can download the audio of the pastor teaching, you know, why Islam is, you know, false, or why Christ is supreme, and why the scripture tell us so. So as we are trying to wrap up here, Marilyn and Christiana are in Nampa, Idaho, and I occasionally visit.
True.
Congo is our heart. I'm heading back there in 2 weeks to do more training, because that's the only way we're going to make a difference, is to raise up the next generation. Mozambique, Lesotho, Uganda, Kenya, Haiti, Costa Rica, Ecuador, Indonesia, Central Asia. Wherever we have a base, I am right now responding as field IT support. So if they have a need, they need a new server, they need satellite or Wi-Fi setup, I go and help them as needed. And then my heart is in this training and setting up the next generation. So I teach. I have three rules in my class. First is the physical. So they have learned traditionally by memorization. You know, they're traditional instructors. They tell them something, they have to write it down and memorize it, and that's what they get, oral, rote memorization. So as a way to try and take our Western concept of, you know, well, learn this, think this way, think, you know, outside the box, to that context, like, well, memorize these three rules, and then we're going to apply them. And each day we try a new way of applying the simple three rules so that they can take their memorization and apply it in a new thought-provoking way to get outside their, okay, this is not the same problem as yesterday. How do I do this? Well, go back to your rule number one. You know, what's the physical? Then what's the address? What's the network? And then what's the route? And so it's a way of kind of bringing them into thinking out of the box, thinking for their own, and meeting Avuta's passion for his people and his country of training. So I travel and do these trainings a lot. We are running out of time, but some of the challenges we've had are insects, part of the infrastructure again. This is your lightning map. There's another dark heart there in Africa, which is the number of lightning strikes per year. So grounding is a very critical thing that needs to be taught. So I teach them how to dig a proper ground, how to properly ground their electrical equipment, and set up communication networks as necessary.
Yeah, I think I look at this and I think about all that that we learned even here in Del Rio and that we can transfer. And I just want to encourage you as a body to continue to bring up the next generation of people who are going to go out from here, and who knows what will happen. We appreciate you. We appreciate your support and all that this particular body has meant to us, Joe and Kathy in particular. So thank you. Thank you for having us.